This episode is brought to you by Sterling Soap Company. Fellas, you've heard the phrase, look good, feel good, right? But why not add smell good to that too? That's where Sterling Soap Company comes in. First, Sterling Soap is 100% natural and has a wide variety of bath soaps, shave soaps, beard balm, lotions, and cologne. Second, there's a scent just for you. How about burgundy? Yeah, it's more than a color. The Sterling Soap folks blend natural essential oils with hints of mahogany, golden amber, and sandalwood. Or how about D503, an intensely masculine scent inspired by Legend by Mont Blanc. And third, you will feel good about the price. For just a little more than you'd pay at the grocery store, Sterling Soap will leave you feeling clean, refreshed, and ready for whatever's next. Give Sterling Soap a try today. Visit sterlingsoap.com. This Day in Sports History. Hey, and welcome to another edition of This Day in Sports History. It's May 13th, and on this day in 1973, it was the first Battle of the Sexes tennis match, or as it soon would be called, the Mother's Day Massacre. At this point in time, Bobby Riggs was a 55-year-old former men's tennis champion. He had won Wimbledon and the U.S. Open in 1939, becoming the world's top tennis player in the process. He won the U.S. Open again in 1941, and then he climbed on top of the tennis world again in 1946 and 47. He was never known as a power player. Instead, he was savvy, using ball control and change of speed on his shots. He was a tactical artisan on the court, if you will. He was also a hustler, a gambler, and a loudmouth. Now, in the early 70s, women's world number one, Billie Jean King, had been instrumental in establishing the first women's professional tour, and she started discussing equal pay for men and women in tennis, to which the outspoken Riggs infamously said, quote, "A woman's place is in the kitchen and the bedroom, and not necessarily in that order," end quote, which quickly earned him the title of male chauvinist pig, and rightly so. In 73, Riggs started talking about how the women's game was inferior and how he could beat the top women's player in the world, and he started pestering King for a match. But King was not interested in playing into Riggs' shenanigans. So then he started pestering the world's number two player, and the woman considered to be the best women's tennis player of all time at that point, Margaret Court. Court was an Australian, born 3 years after Riggs had won Wimbledon and the U.S. Open in 1939. She won the Women's Singles Grand Slam in 1970, meaning she won all four major titles that year. By this time in 73, she had won 22 singles Grand Slam titles, and she is still the only woman to ever complete two Grand Slam box sets, meaning she won all the Grand Slam tournaments in singles, doubles, and mixed doubles. She did it once as an amateur, and again as a professional. The court agreed to take on Riggs. She was apparently not on the front lines in the equal rights fight and was interested in the $10,000 winner's check. But Court was not prepared for the pressure and the hype that Riggs would build for this match. So on this day in 1973 in Ramona, California, Riggs and Court met on the tennis court. There were 3,500 in attendance that day, one of which was the actor John Wayne, who was there to present the check to the winner, and an estimated 10 million watching the match on CBS that night. It was Mother's Day, and prior to the match, Riggs patronizingly handed Court a Mother's Day bouquet of roses. It went south for Court in a hurry. She put less than half of her first serves in play and committed 10 unforced return errors. She was thrown off by Riggs's soft serves and array of junk shots, but they were well placed and kept Court off balance throughout. Riggs skated to a 3-0 lead in the first, with Court winning only 4 points in that stretch. When Riggs served back-to-back aces to take a 4-1 lead in the second, Court was essentially done. Riggs won in straight sets 6-2, 6-1. Court's reaction after the match would have had more sting had she won. But she said, quote, "I didn't expect so many soft shots. We girls don't play like that," end quote. Riggs, of course, basked in his own glory and gloated. Now I want King bad. I'll play her on clay, grass, wood, cement, marble, or roller skates. We gotta keep this sex thing going. I'm a women's specialist now. I'm going around the world to challenge all the women champions. England, France, Czechoslovakia, everywhere. Me against them, battles of sexes, I've found a whole different life. Soon after, Billie Jean King knew what she needed to do and accepted the offer from Riggs. The weight of women around the world rested on King's shoulders to shut Riggs up, and that match would take place 4 months later on September 20th. Also on this day, maybe golfer Bruce Crampton should just not have played golf on May the 13th. Or maybe the number 18 was his unlucky number because he had not one but two meltdowns in different years at the same golf tournament. In 1962, Crampton stepped onto the 18th tee on Sunday as the leader of the Colonial National Invitational, needing only a par to secure the win. A bogey would be bad, but not catastrophic. He would still play in a playoff. But of course, he hit his approach into a lake and made double bogey, missing the playoff by a shot. He had done the same thing the day before. Arnold Palmer was the eventual champion of that tournament, and the lake would soon be tabbed Crampton's Lake for his follies on successive days in 62. And then in 1973, Crampton stepped onto the 18th hole tee box again, needing only a par to win the Colonial. This time, he hooked his tee shot into a lateral water hazard, then a bunker, and missed his bogey putt to gift Tom Weisskopf the one-shot victory. And the next time you are struggling on the golf course, remember this story of the unfortunate French golfer Philippe Porquier, who on this day in 1978 at the French Open took 20 shots to finish the 511-yard par 5 13th hole at Le Bol. Apparently, there was some shankopotamus shots and a few lost balls along the way in this one-hole adventure. He carded a 98 that day for his round, which followed up the 82 he fired in the first round. Yeah, needless to say, but I'll say it anyway, he did not get to play the weekend. The 20 strokes is the most ever recorded on a hole during a European tour event. In 1976, it was the New York Nets beating the Denver Nuggets to win the final ABA championship. This was Game 6 of the best-of-seven series, with the Nets up 3-2. The game was played in the Nassau Coliseum on Long Island, and the full house of 15,934 were a bit dismayed in the third quarter, with the home team down 22 points with only 17 minutes of basketball left. Nobody could stop Nuggets high flyer David Thompson, who finished the night with 42. Those watching live figured the series was headed back to the Mile High City for the decisive Game 7. But Nets coach Kevin Lockery dialed up the defensive pressure, forcing the Nuggets into turnover after turnover. And by the end of the third, the Nets had whittled it down to a 14-point deficit heading to the fourth. Julius Erving had 5 fourth-quarter steals, leading to easy buckets, and the Nets outscored Denver by 20 in the final frame to win by 6. Erving finished with 31 points. With the upcoming merger, both the Nets and Nuggets would join the NBA the following year, along with the Indiana Pacers and San Antonio Spurs. And, side note, despite winning the Mega Bowl that year, Jackie Moon and the Flint Tropics were left out of the merger and folded. And in 1983, football head coach Bud Grant was inducted into the Canadian Football Hall of Fame. Grant was honored for the time he spent with the Winnipeg Blue Bombers from 1957 through 1966. In his 10 seasons as coach of the Blue Bombers, Grant led the team to 6 Grey Cup appearances and 4 championships. He was the first coach to lead teams to play in the Grey Cup and a Super Bowl. Marv Levy joined him on that short list a little bit later. Grant was also the first to be inducted into the American Football Hall of Fame and the Canadian Football Hall of Fame. Levy and quarterback Warren Moon are the only ones on that list. And time now for the non-sports Did You Know? Cats can also be allergic to humans. That's all for today. And look, I get it. You are allergic to leaving reviews and comments on Apple Podcasts. But if you could overcome that with a figurative Benadryl and just this once, leave a 5-star rating and a comment about how much you're enjoying the podcast, that would be great. But if this plea caused you to sneeze and get itchy eyes, it's okay. You can step away. I understand. And I'll talk to you tomorrow on This Day in Sports History. This has been an original Thrive Suite production.
Hey there, Sports History fans.
We've got some exciting news to share with you. Six of our podcasts from the Sports History Network have made it to the final round of voting for the prestigious Sports Podcast Awards. Here are their shows and the categories. Historically Speaking Sports and This Day in Sports History are both competing for Best Sports Talk Podcast. No Nonsense Old School Weightlifting History is in the running for Best Fitness, Health, and Well-Being Podcast. When Football Was Football is up for Best Sports Documentary Podcast. Wrestling with Heels On has entered the ring for Best Wrestling Podcast. And Shoulder Roll Virtual Boxing is fighting for the title for Best Combat Sports Podcast. Now, of course, we need your help to take home the championship for each of these awesome shows. All you gotta do is head over to sportshistorynetwork.com/vote, cast your vote for your favorite shows, or better yet, all six of them. Again, every vote counts, and we gotta show the world how much sports history really matters. So thank you for your support and making Sports History Network the headquarters for sports yesteryear. But again, don't wait. You gotta go vote now. That's over at sportshistorynetwork.com/vote.